Welcome to the David Palmer Presidential Library Podcast. I'm Harrison Hoffman, filling in for Chris Lorenz, who unfortunately couldn't join us for the episode this week, so I'm stepping in as host. And with me, as always, is Robert Kitts.
Hey. We're all thinking of Chris right now. Hopefully the show is half as good as it is with him, and then we'll have done a pretty good job keeping doing as good a job as we can.
Yep, absolutely. And we have a new guest this week. Alex is here joining us today.
Holla.
So Alex, do you want to kind of give us a quick couple of seconds on your 24 history background, like any kind of previous history with the show?
So I used to watch this in college many, many years ago. I remember Chloe getting gassed, some type of chamber, the president always being killed in some way, but still living. Pretty much exactly what I saw tonight.
Yeah, so is this the first episode that you've seen of this season?
This is the first episode I've seen of this season,
So you're just coming in totally, totally cold to this, so it's going to be interesting to get an outsider's perspective on what the fuck just happened right there.
I would agree.
Okay, great.
So first, let's get to our drink of the week this week. And so this week, after the dramatic drone strike last week, we really wanted a drone-themed drink. And we looked on the internet. We couldn't find one, so we just made it up. So our drone strike drink this week has some tequila, has some rum, has some pineapple juice, has some grapefruit juice. And Harrison, what did you think of the drink?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think for a drink that we invented earlier today, pretty good, you know?
Was it a little too tropical for a dark drone strike situation?
The tropicalness of the drink definitely surprised me a little bit, you know? We could have gone for something maybe soccer field themed. I don't know, maybe.
But what's a soccer field themed drink?
I don't know.
Like Heineken?
Yeah, it could be Heineken. It's something that reminds you of grass or, I don't know.
So we should have been smoking pot.
Yeah. Oh, man. We could have. Oh, this could have been the pot smoking one.
I guess it could have been.
This one would have been super off the rails.
Even more than usual.
Yeah.
What did you think of the drink, Alex?
Tasted like America.
Tasted like America?
America.
Nice.
Tasted like a bad sorority party mixture made 10 minutes before everyone walked in.
We had debated making it in a cooler. I think that maybe for the finale of the season, we'll make a big drink in a cooler.
We just need to get more people. Like, we just need to get, like, 20 people to roll in to watch the finale. And then you make it in a cooler and you're good. When you've got, like, 8 people, like, you got to be real dedicated to finish a cooler with 8 people.
Yeah, I guess our crew of 8, if we finish that cooler, the podcast probably wouldn't happen until the next day.
Or it'd be a real bad podcast. It might still happen.
It would end up being an 8-person podcast. We just do it
for sure,
room, I think.
Or maybe the best podcast.
Could be. It would seem like the best of the time, I think. I think it's pretty safe to say.
After we record that podcast, we'd all be high-fiving like, great podcast!
Best podcast ever.
So I guess we'll get to the episode now. And I guess we'll just jump right into, we talked a lot about President Heller getting killed last week, and surprise, surprise, President Heller is still alive.
And, you know, I feel like after watching so many seasons of 24, I probably should have seen that one coming, because they didn't really have a very clear shot of him getting hit by that missile. But, you know, he's alive. Surprise, surprise.
They did a really good job with, like, seeing the Starks feed of President Heller getting killed, because it really felt like, oh, no, we totally saw him get hit because he was standing right there, and then you saw the field blow up. But
totally.
They did a really good job of showing why, even though it looked that way. Like, I'd heard on the internet people rumoring that maybe he wasn't dead, and I was like, I can't see how that would make any sense. But then they actually showed the episode. It kind of did make a little bit of sense. That was good.
Yeah.
I just want to make a comment. That angle that they showed of him getting shot today reminded very much, quite conveniently, of the goal line technology from the World Cup. It's almost like they shared the technology in the show from that angle. Like, maybe it went in, maybe it didn't. Maybe he got hit, maybe he didn't.
Yeah, that's true. And they super just rip that whole loop the video thing off of speed. Like, it's like down to the, you know, hey, he kind of twitched a little bit, and they noticed it, just like the woman kind of moving her purse or whatever in speed, you know.
Jack Bauer took the hostage out of the equation.
Yeah, Jack Bauer did take the hostage out of the equation. Amazing.
So the Cat and Rob figure this out because it turns out they actually are going to follow through with the deal and destroy the drones. And they destroy the first five really quick. But the last one, they have to, fly it back from London. And so that gives them a little bit of time for them to figure out that the president wasn't actually killed. And so then they reverse course and start to send the drone back towards London instead of destroying it. And I guess so a lot of the episode is just sort of setting up that premise for the rest of the episode, was that the drone is coming back. They've got one drone left. The president's still alive. And it was pretty funny how Jack brings his Serbian friend back in. And Jack's just, the president's like, take me back to the presidential palace or whatever, wherever he's staying. And then Jack and Serbian go like, nah, we're not going to do that. And then president's like, oh, okay, fine. I guess we're going to do what you say.
Yeah, I love how he saves the president's life, and then he just immediately kind of loads the president into this, not random guy's car, but just like, it's like some guy's car. You know, I mean, he's been in the season before. We don't really know that character super well, but like now he's just taking care of the president.
From the president's point of view, it's real random. It's, hey, here's this guy you've never seen before.
Get in the car.
And he's clearly, you know, looks a little shady. Just
has
a
gigantic scar in his head, and, you know, oh, God. Yeah, I feel like that was a little bit dubious.
So do you guys think that he was going to turn on Jack and do something to the president, or did you think he was on the up and up?
I mean, I didn't think he was going to turn. I feel like, you know, he was kind of on the up and up.
What are you, Alex? You haven't seen the rest of the season, so when the president got in that car, what were you thinking?
Well, I mean, the scar on his... he had the scar on his forehead, very much like Harry Potter, I would say. Just ominous right there. But second... his response to it was like, who are you? Oh, I'm not even a citizen. Don't even worry about me. It's like, okay, the president of the United States gets put in a random car with this random man. That felt like there was going to be a new plot twist.
Nope. Just delivered him right to where he was supposed to. That went that whole piece was absolutely unnecessary. They wasted a good 5 minutes of that show on that today.
So is Serbian guy going to factor in like before the end of the season?
And they're not
just
at
like
all.
They're just setting up how noble he is for a certain purpose, or is it just totally like he's just a plot device and like now he's delivered the president and they're gonna pack him away until they might need him for a plot device again?
He's a total plot device. I think that, you know, when the president was like, hey, let the guy go free, you know, he's walking off into the sunset. He's not in the show anymore ever again.
Maybe that's like Jack Bauer's like side friend that owed a bet, like, oh, okay, I guess I'll put you in 24 for this week.
You think one time when Kiefer was drunk, he made that bet with this random dude?
Haven't you seen the videos of him just randomly drunk?
This is
one of those.
I've seen lots of Kiefer drunk videos.
Really? I was not aware of this part of Kiefer's
personality. Have you not seen the video of Kiefer Sutherland attacking a Christmas tree?
It's fantastic.
I have not. What?
Oh, what? Oh, we're going to talk about this next week. this is a problem that you haven't seen this.
Okay, we'll put a link to this video on our Facebook page this week.
Oh, yes.
But, we had a little audio glitch there, but I think we're good now.
And so let's get to who I'm starting to think might be my favorite character of the season.
Martin Lawrence, I hope.
Oh no. Eric, no. But we should talk about the return of Eric in a little bit.
We'll talk about
probably.
The return of Eric, but first I want to talk about Mr. Mark Boudreau, who wasn't in this episode very much, but like I'm like early in the season, we were just like, I cannot stand this guy. And now I'm like, I cannot get enough of this guy.
He's the standout of the season, for sure.
And so when Audrey, you know, is giving Mark all kinds of dirty looks when the president's like officially dead, and then she hears from none other than Jack Bauer, don't worry, I saved your dad's life.
Oh, God.
He's totally fine. I totally dealt with it. The looks across between Mark and Audrey are just next level.
Oh, my God. Jack came out of this looking so good, and Mark just came out looking terrible. You know, in her eyes, like, Mark is the one who sent her dad off to his death, and then Jack kind of begrudgingly went along with his plan, but then saved his life. Jack is, oh, man.
If Jack had planned it this way, just to win Audrey back, he couldn't have planned it better.
Absolutely not. Yeah, that was... yeah, amazing.
Can I just ask this? How many president's daughters has Jack Bauer impressed throughout the seasons? Is this the first president's daughter that he's like, you know, hey, babe, save your dad again.
Let's go to our 24 historian, Rob, on this one.
I'm trying to think if Jack Bauer has met a president's daughter before this one. Because when he knew Audrey before, she wasn't the president's daughter. she was the Secretary of Defense's daughter. And then I'm trying to think, like, if there's any other president's daughters he's actually interacted with. Because we met David Palmer's daughter, but I don't know if she ever had a scene with Jack Bauer.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And I'm trying to think if we've met any other presidential offspring. Did President Taylor have a daughter or a son? Or was it just her and her husband and her chief of staff?
I mean, she might have. I don't think that we actually saw them on screen,
right,
or like anything.
More on screen did we see them. Or
yeah,
not.
I don't know. I keep on getting confused with the West Wing. I keep on saying no, but it's not really the same thing at all.
Do we need to pitch a 24 West Wing crossover where it's all the characters from the West Wing and Jack Bauer?
If there was the White House president and staff from the West Wing and the CTU, CIA kind of people from 24, you'd have hell of a show right there.
West Wing with President Jack Bauer.
And get Aaron Sorkin to write all of the White House scenes and get whoever writes all this 24 stuff to write all the crazy action scenes, and you're looking great.
It does sound pretty good.
Absolutely.
Fox, get on that.
Anyone at Fox listening, I will produce that show if you want me to. So we also saw the triumphant return of Eric, as we talked about a second ago. And my working theory is that during filming for this season, Eric was kind of out with pneumonia or something and was just kind of unable to show up to set for like a couple weeks. And they just kind of didn't really show him on camera. And then all of a sudden, he's just back in the mix right now. No explanation of how he got better or why he's kind of here. I think that he either had a prior commitment to go shoot something else, or he was sick, or something crazy happened.
I don't have a better explanation than that, because it just, like, we saw Eric when, you know, the drone hit this house, and we didn't know what happened to him. And then we heard Steve say, he's so injured, he can't go out in the field. Then we randomly saw him a couple episodes ago just standing around.
Well, we saw the back of his head. That could have been anyone.
I thought we saw him from the front really quickly.
I don't know, maybe.
And then he was just not around for a couple episodes. And now he's just totally fine.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't have a better explanation than the actor, like, had some sort of problem and they had to, like, write him out of a couple episodes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when we kind of saw him for a couple seconds in that other episode, that could have been any shot. Like, I don't think that was necessarily shot the week.
That could have been stock footage.
That could have been stock footage.
We saw a random shot of him standing in CTU. It could have been anything.
Totally, totally.
That was left over from the pilot.
So if anyone has any inside info, tweet us. Let us know. We should tweet at the actor, probably, and
oh,
check
yeah.
on this.
I don't
see
even
what's going
know
on.
If he's on Twitter. He probably is, though.
Probably.
Even Kiefer's on Twitter. So.
For sure.
So Eric's back, and he just gets sent out to the field with Kate, you know, teaming up with Kate again, because Chloe has tapped into the drone. That's how they pulled the whole speed thing. And so she's kind of got a rough idea of their location, and so Steve sends Eric and Kate out there. But then Chloe calls good old Julian Assange and is like, hey, I've kind of got this location roughly narrowed down. Can you help me? And he's just like, oh, yeah, I'll use my magic GPS app.
That he randomly just had.
Then immediately is like, oh, yeah, she's totally like in this building. There you go.
So are we to think that, you know, he's kind of putting the pieces together in his head and he says, I'm going to help him track down this device so that it will go back to CIA, and then I can get Steve Navarro to kind of come and deliver it to me, and that's why he helped out? Or do you think he kind of put that together at that point? I guess I kind of jumped ahead in the plot a little bit, but
yeah, like, I guess based on the end of the episode, that's sort of what you think. Like, and when he does it, you figure, I guess he's just helping out Chloe because he still likes Chloe, even though she's helping out Jack Bauer. But based, that kind of seemed kind of weak, like, because he'd kind of been like, Chloe, as long as you're dealing with Jack Bauer, I'm done with you. I can't deal with you, you know, helping out the man. But the fact that he might know about this override and could use it for his own mysterious purposes, and that he helps her to help get it to Steve Navarro, makes a ton of sense and would help explain why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we kind of find that there's sort of this plan for Steve Navarro to deliver this thing, and you know, Oh, there's so much stuff we have to talk about before we talk about that, though. We should probably wait on that for a second.
That's like, ahead a little
that's
bit.
Like the end of the episode. We should probably kind of rewind to the whole raid on Margo's place.
So Jack commandeers the helicopter that he brought the present to the football stadium with. And Kate and Eric are headed for the same place because Julian Assange helps Chloe forget where it is. And so then they all sort of get there at the same time. And Margo, and I was really excited about this, Margo has set up a perimeter to help, you know, keep out the CIA, which I was real, that's like the one big 24 staple we hadn't heard yet this year.
For sure.
Setting up a perimeter. And so then, you know, we just got a really great sequence of, you know, Eric and Kate are trying to get in through on the ground, and Jack lands the helicopter on the roof, and they're just all trying to get in to get to the Stark stronghold.
I wasn't really super clear on why they had to blow up that power thing in order to track them. Like, did you understand that?
So it was pretty hand wavy. It was just like Chloe's like, I need to figure out what room they're in, and if all the other like routers and electrical signals go out, their drone will be on its own electrical thing.
I believe the quote was, only unless they're on an uninterruptible power supply.
Oh, I see. And so the idea was, if all the other power goes out, because the drone is on its own special power supply, like Alex said, she'll be able to get a signal from that and figure out exactly what room they're in. Did you get that, Alex?
I think that's what they were going for, but it made no sense. From an electrical engineering standpoint, that made absolutely no sense.
True, but this is 24, so I guess we got to give them a little bit of whatever. But it was pretty impressive. They had just the one grenade in the car that created such a huge explosion in the power source.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I feel like that was kind of a bit of a chain reaction with all of that power stuff. I don't really know how that works when that explodes. If video games have taught me anything, those types of things tend to explode a lot.
I guess that's true. But I wish they'd had more grenades, because later on it was like, oh, they're just going to throw a grenade down the hall.
God, that was so frustrating. It's like, you know, they had this big kind of hallway shootout, and literally all they have to do is just throw a grenade down there or bring in the bazooka or whatever, just whatever, and they just totally don't do that.
I do want to take the point to just congratulate, like, the Xcel Energies of the world. From after a grenade just destroying the input power to a building, they immediately were able to restore it. Like, I just want to give one to Xcel Energies out there.
Yeah, I wasn't really clear on why the power came back up there. That was kind of weird.
Was immediate.
Is that the emergency lighting, or I don't really know what happened.
I wasn't sure if we were supposed to assume that, like, that was part of their special uninterruptible power supply, was they had a backup generator to power all the lights.
I don't,
or whether that was like just the city backup or something.
But I don't think so. I mean, like that, like the drone control thing was on a battery backup kind of thing. But I don't know. That was super weird.
So Jack tries to come in through the ceiling,
he lands the helicopter on the building.
He lands the helicopter, takes out like five guys, but then he realizes he can't get in through the building, so he goes back up to the roof, while Kate and Eric and backup come in through the ground floor. And then Jack just starts rappelling down the side. I don't even know where he got that equipment to rappel from.
It's in his all-purpose messenger bag that he always carries.
Is it the Jack man purse?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so he's just rappelling down the side of this building, and you know, this Robb Stark fella kind of sees him out there and sort of shoots up the window. And, you know, he kind of dodges out of the way or whatever. And then, like an idiot, he just kind of strolls on over to the window. He's like, oh, I wonder where he went. Pulled out the window and just dead on the concrete. And, like, that was super dumb. Like, I don't know why. And when that happened, I was immediately thinking, kill the week. But I actually don't think that's going to be the winner.
Well, we're going to get to that. Kill the week later. There were a lot. At first, there were a lot of candidates. Then suddenly there was only one candidate. But we'll get to that. So Rob and Kat decide they're not going to kill the president. They're just going to try to bomb Waterloo Station because that's the most death and destruction.
And you know, that wasn't kind of determined by anything other than they were showing Waterloo Station on the news in their hideout. Like, that wasn't really thought through. And it's like, it seems like there's a lot of people there. Get that drone over there.
Kat really did seem to be all about, like, the president's going to feel really bad when he sees all these people dead.
But wasn't the video of Waterloo Station just a bunch of people running around like some havoc was happening?
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, the president or the prime minister told them to, Stephen Fry, told them to evacuate the city, and people are everyone's getting on the train for some reason.
I thought Stephen Fry told them to remain calm, and they're like, sure. Sorry. The prime minister wants us to remain calm.
Everyone get out of the city.
Let's freak out.
Exactly, exactly.
Englishmen for you.
Exactly. But then, you know, is Waterloo Station like the biggest station in London?
I don't know if it's the biggest
like,
one in London.
Like King's Cross or something. Like it was just random that they picked it because it was on the TV.
I feel like Waterloo Station is just like a really well-known one.
Right.
I don't know if it's the biggest. It's probably not the biggest one.
This sounds like Wikipedia research to me on 24's part.
We should get a summer research intern. I think it's about time for that.
Well, we're going to do research on this podcast now?
No, I'm saying if we had a research intern over here, they could just be kind of throwing facts over the wall and making us look really smart.
That would be great.
Be pretty good, yeah.
You should have a fact of the week.
Fact of the week? Like just random?
Yeah, I'm suggesting it.
How does fact of the week work?
Maybe we say some random shit on the podcast, and then next week we're like, actually, there's the fact of the week. Let's correct that.
So we have a corrections segment.
Yeah.
We kind of did that with the MI5, MI6 thing.
We did
bit.
It one time, but yeah. So that would have been the fact of the week for that week.
Guys, so it's not just like, orange juice is delicious. I guess it's more of more subjective than a fact, but...
That'd be a pretty amazing... We just have a total non-sequitur fact of the week.
Yeah.
Like, the atomic weight of plutonium is blah, blah, blah.
See, you come to the DPPL, hear about 24, and you learn something.
Does that let us mark us on iTunes as an educational podcast?
I think that might tip us into the educational bucket we've been going for. That might mislead people a little bit, and I don't know.
Oh, no.
So, you know, Rob Stark gets tossed from that window. Dead on the pavement immediately. Of course, they're on like the fifth floor, which doesn't seem
fifth floor.
Doesn't seem that high, but I guess on the
I
pavement, you'll probably get killed from that.
Do you want me to throw you from the fifth floor?
not necessarily. He did not roll out of it at all.
It was strange that the explosion came only from his head on the pavement, though.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, it was mostly his head just caving in on the pavement.
Jack knows how to throw people out the window for maximum death impact.
Yeah, for sure. For
He's
sure.
Practiced this many times, like dummies and stuff.
That was a pretty strong left-handed over-the-shoulder throw, too. Like he picked up that guy and heaved him one-hander.
Yeah. Rob didn't see it coming, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a little disappointed though when Jack then went in the window and Cat Stark was there, because like we named one of our previous episodes, Cat Stark is a Stone Cold Killer. And I just expect her to like grab a gun or a knife or something. And Jack just like takes her down.
Yeah,
with
she
no
was,
effort.
She was totally not ready for that. Didn't have a gun on her at all. Like I didn't really understand why she wasn't ready for that because she knew that, you know, people were kind of storming the thing. I think that they said, "Oh, they're coming in," so she probably would have had a gun. That seemed super weird.
Yeah, like I felt like she would just like have a shotgun under her like on her belt or something, and just like whip it out.
Goosh.
And be like,
yeah,
and Jack would have had to, you know, do some sort of crazy maneuver to take her down. But it was pretty straightforward. And then
so he comes in, shoots her in the leg, non-lethal shot, very intentional non-lethal shot.
Yeah.
And you know somebody's kind of screaming in his ear like, oh yeah, like you know the missile's already launched, but you can override it because it's laser guided or something.
Yeah. That
so
was Chloe.
So he kind of yeah Chloe. So he kind of overrides it. And then kind of takes control of the joystick, but he's kind of still holding Margot with his left hand. And I don't really know what, like, she's just kind of close to the thing, and, like, it's kind of weird.
He just kind of had her, like, in a hold so that, like, if he needed to get some information out of her, she was ready. But then...
Oh, maybe that's why he went non-lethal, because he thought that he might need some info.
Well, yeah, I definitely felt like partly he went non-lethal in case he needs some info. But I also thought he, you know, was going to be, you know, he's Jack Bauer. He wants people brought to justice in the
totally.
Correct way. But then after he guides the missile into the Thames River.
Oh, name drop.
Name drop. And the threat is neutralized.
How can you say non-justice when he just like mercs Catelyn Stark out the window? and such an Olympic way that she lands perfectly, like her son Rob Stark on the ground, with the perfect splash of a head, just
right,
exactly the same way.
Right next to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like I did feel like it was an awesome kill. great kill. But like I felt weird about it because that's kind of a very non-Jack Bauer thing. He usually, you know, if it's possible and they didn't like murder someone in his family, like kind of, you know, takes him down, you know, brings him in case they need him for questioning, bring him to justice kind of thing. But he just, you know, tosses her out of that window. And, you know, like, she didn't really do anything super personal to Jack. This is the first thing they've ever met. So it wasn't a personal, you know, I'm going to throw you out of this window because we have history kind of thing. He just kind of did it.
Yeah.
It was a little weird.
Do you feel, like, analogous to, sorry for the Game of Thrones reference, but was that room more like River Run? River Run, is that the right place? And that he was kind of, you know, just cast a marrying her out the window.
Is River Run the place with the giant hole in the floor?
No.
Is that a different place?
No, River Run's the red wedding place.
Oh, got it. I was having flashbacks to people getting through the moon door a little bit. I feel like that was pretty similar.
The people
there
who don't watch Game of Thrones are going to get real mad at us.
I mean, I don't think it's any secret that the people in that place throw people through that big hole in the ground.
Yeah,
I'm not naming names.
Through Chekhov's moon door.
Yeah, through the moon door. Oh man.
I feel like, I mean, Catelyn did get thrown out 5 stores, but you know she might come back. We don't know.
Like Tony.
there was somebody in our watch party who claimed that they saw Tony Almeida in the defending force in Margot's space, but I don't think it was him.
That would be so amazing if they actually got the actor who plays Tony to be in it for like 2 seconds
and they didn't acknowledge it.
Didn't acknowledge it and mention him again, but I don't think they would do that.
That'd be the greatest Easter egg of all time.
I think if they bring Tony back, there's gonna be like dramatic zoom in on him, like, so you definitely know it's him.
Tony's coming back. I am putting it out there. Tony's coming back.
Maybe season 10.
Tony's coming back in the last episode of this season and setting up the next season. Mark my words.
Hey, do we have a confirmed next season?
No.
No.
Because from what I've seen, it looks like there's a confirmed never again.
What?
Well, the kind of producers said, you know, hey, this one wasn't something we were planning to do, but we kind of had this great idea, and we're like, hey, maybe we should do this. So they're kind of said, we don't have any plans to do a new season right now, but, you know, maybe if we kind of have a good idea, we'll do another one.
Well, another thing is that the president of Fox Television got fired a couple months ago.
Oh, no.
And so he's the guy who canceled 24. He's the guy who's like, we're bringing back 24. But now he's just gone. So there's no, like, loyalty to, like, oh, yeah, we decided to bring back 24. Like, there's just a clean slate with, like, a new guy in charge.
So I haven't really looked at the ratings, but I feel like this season's a hit. I mean, there's been a lot of buzz around
junk.
It, I think. It hit the junk.
So I haven't looked at the ratings that closely either, but I got the impression that it's not a hit, it's not a bomb, it's okay out of 10. It's just, like, doing... It's not doing bad, but it's not really doing great.
Is not good for a show as expensive as 24 to produce.
Well, we've been talking about the bad CGI. Maybe it's not as expensive as we think anymore.
Cutting corners.
Like, it all depends on, like, how much money is Kiefer asking for. Like, if Kiefer takes a pay cut because he's got nothing better to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's not doing anything else. Like, what else is he doing except for playing Jack Bauer?
He did his other show that was really not that good.
Wait,
or Attacking Christmas Trees.
he was still Jack Bauer.
Okay.
Yeah. But he's probably kind of cheap these days, I would think.
Still, Martin Lawrence and Lou Diamond Phillips in this episode were fantastic. They have nothing else going on. Just saying.
So I guess speaking of Lou Diamond Phillips, let's talk about our old pal Steve Navarro. Who gets a call. So both Kate and Steve get a call that Jordan, our dearly departed goatee guy,
I didn't think he was dead at all.
Well, like, we didn't see him, like, be clearly alive, but, like, they didn't really show him that dead, so I assume that meant that he was going to be still alive, but we get confirmed that he's totally dead.
Yeah, and they're, you know, covering him up, putting him in body bags. He's dead, dead.
And Steve is so happy to hear that Jordan's dead. He's like, let's add a big sigh of relief. Like, oh,
he was making,
dodge the bullet, buddy.
He was making the weirdest faces on the phone on that phone call and doing the worst acting ever. He's like, Jordan's dead? What? What do you mean? Oh, can you believe Jordan's dead? Like, it was bad.
What? Jordan's dead?
Yeah, and then like when he has to explain it to the people standing next to him after the call, same drill.
But on the call, they're like, yeah, Jordan's dead with some other random guy who's also dead. And Steve's not happy about
like,
this.
What? His face is so crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, Steve's all like, oh, no. And then someone asks, like, hey, did you say Jordan was dead? And Steve's like, I don't want to talk about it. And then just goes to get his secret Julian Assange phone.
Yeah, with the subtlety of a sixth grade note handed across in front of the teacher, he literally just walks in front of everyone through the windows and pulls out his phone to talk to Lemmy Winks himself.
And yeah, you know, he walks into that all glass room, you know, puts the new SIM card or encryption thing
on
his phone.
Steve doesn't have enough appreciation for his all glass room, I don't think.
Yeah, I feel like he
feels like he's being super secretive in there, and like everyone's just staring at him.
I feel like Steve Navarro has never been a field agent. He's clearly not a spy of any sort. Yeah, he doesn't get it. So he knows that they're about to find out that this assassin has a link to him. They're going to figure out he's an assassin. He's going to be linked to it. So he calls up Julian Assange, which I don't even know what that guy's name is anymore, and he's like, I need to get out of here because they're about to find me out and I'm about to be fucked, so you got to get me out.
I guess I'll give him a little credit for realizing how bad his situation was, because we've definitely seen people who do not realize how bad the situation is.
Here's something that I didn't really understand. So, you know, he obviously realizes that that guy can be sort of traced back to him. So, you know, they try to kind of run this assassin's fingerprints, and they say, hey, he's some kind of secret operative. We had, like, his prints are on file, but we can't get his thing. Jack calls up his friend over at the CIA, runs it through some other super secret database, and they find the guy. And then in kind of like the previous bosses, I guess, category of that guy's profile, Steve Navarro's name is in there. But here's what I don't get. So in a previous episode, he had called up Julian Assange and is like, hey, I need a cleaner to come and fix this thing for me. So I was under the impression that the WikiLeaks people had hired this assassin for Steve, and that there was no connection between Steve and that. So then I didn't understand why this assassin had apparently worked for him before. I didn't get that at all.
It didn't really make any sense. Like, you know, why would we, unless you think Julian Assange is working like, you know, four levels deep, and it's just like, I'm going to set Steve Navarro up with an assassin who can be traced back to Steve Navarro for some nefarious purpose that I do not understand. But since I don't understand that, I'm just going to say it doesn't make any sense took Steve Navarro up with an assassin who can be traced back to Steve Navarro.
No, it's super dumb. And it is really super dumb if Navarro didn't arrange it. Like, I can see if Navarro arranged it because he might not know anybody who he's not connected to. So he calls up the best guy and it happens to be connected to him, right?
Yeah.
But
I would hope the head of CIA London is not super versed in assassins that he can just call up on the phone to do, you know, covert illegal ops.
I'm just curious. The speed with which they were trying to search that was almost like the speed of a Halo 3 server, you know, back in 2007. It's like they were waiting for a result.
It was going one by one, yeah.
I feel like, you know, CIA or what's the London equivalent?
Well, it's CIA also London, CIA. But CIA. We call it CTU a lot because that's what it used to be called.
Why does it take them minutes, you know, 30 seconds worth of searching and scrolling on the screen for them to find?
I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, how many fingerprints are in kind of the world fingerprint database? Like a shit ton, right?
But compare that to Kat Stark's facial recognition software on her drone from last week, which pulled up U.S. president.
No. I mean, you're right about that. But they did know that they were trying to reference that against the president. So you just look at that like a set of one.
I guess that's
maybe
true.
But I don't know. Like, I feel like, you know, if you have a billion prints, it could take a little bit to search on it. But yeah, I don't know. It did seem kind of slow. And they kind of randomly introduced that character back in Langley, which is kind of the first. I
was kind of hoping it would be someone we recognized, like, oh, I got this friend back at Langley, and it was like some random character we'd seen before, but I think that was just a brand new character.
Yeah, it was a totally new character, but yeah, I agree.
It's Kim Bauer. Oh. I got this friend back at Langley. It's like Kim Bauer, like, no, what are you doing?
Do we know what her status is? What's she doing?
I don't think we've heard from her since she took her daughter/Jack's granddaughter out of New York in the middle of season 8.
This is Jack's old wife?
No, this is Jack's daughter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jack's wife died in the first season, and, you know, he's had a few, you know. But
he's had some flings. But
he's had some flings.
I don't think he's gotten married.
Couple president's daughters.
Couple president's daughters. Yeah.
I don't know if he's gotten any as they were the president's daughter yet, but there's 3 episodes left, so that's going to change real soon.
It's happening. Here's my prediction. We still haven't seen that time jump yet. So I think that there's going to be a time...
Let's talk about the time jump for a second.
There's 3 episodes left.
I still
think there's going to be a time jump, because I think that they said that before the season started. They're going to... cover 24 hours in 12 episodes.
I don't know. I think they're just going to do 12 hours and be like, we're out.
They just forgot about it.
I think they were just messing with you.
Maybe.
They're like, yeah, we're still going to do 24 hours. Don't worry about it. And they're like, we're just going to do 12 hours.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like there must be something coming that is pivotal and will take longer than 3 hours to kind of develop. So I think that, you know, there will be kind of a significant time jump.
I don't know. I wish they'd done, like, a bunch of hour-long time jumps, because, like, this episode starts off with news reports of an explosion at Wembley Stadium.
3 seconds later.
Yeah. So what if that was an hour later?
Yeah.
And it's like, Jack the president had been hiding out for an hour, and the media's figured out there's an explosion. Does the episode change at all?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not
and
so
I think that
would
have been, like, super smart to be like, we're just going to put a random hour between the episodes here and there.
But, you know... that's just kind of time jump for no reason. I think that you want there to be time jump for a reason if you're going to do it.
So you want, like, a dramatic multi-hour time jump.
Yes. I want, like, one big chunk where some crazy shit's going to happen. You know, there's...
But I don't want to jump over all the craziness. I want to experience it.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, you know, there's going to be something like, oh, you know, some shit's going to go down in 6 hours, and then it's just 6 hours later, and it's like, uh-oh, it's happening right now.
That would be pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm gonna go on record. I think the time jump's not happening.
Okay.
I think they're gonna be like 11 p.m. We're out.
We had bad info beginning of the season. Maybe
we'll see.
So can I get back to after we had Julia Assange pick up what's her name from the cafe?
Chloe.
So we're at the end of the episode, right? So we have 2 Starks get thrown out a window. We think that the world is safe. We have the device stolen. From Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yep.
What's his name?
Steve Navarro.
Steve Navarro steals that device.
Puts some DOD guy in a chokehold. Snatches that device, gets out of there. Eludes Jack Bauer, right?
I did like how Steve told the guy, you got to put CIA London on lockdown. There's a potential threat. And then Jack just runs in and in 2 seconds gets through that guy.
Big time pistol whip. He hits that guy in the face with his gun so hard.
That lockdown did nothing.
Yeah, that guard's going to have a nasty bruise on his face when he wakes up, I think. He's not going to enjoy that.
Who is the worst bruise, that guard or the guy whose car Jack stole and just punched in the face for no reason?
I think this guy, because Jack hit this guy in the face with his gun. Like the other one was just kind of his fist, so I don't know. I feel like pistol whip doesn't feel that great.
I guess not.
Yeah. But I feel like Kat Stark probably has a bigger bruise on her face right now, though.
Kat Stark is number one in the bruise on the face
I think
competition.
So.
Let's wait for Dark Stark to come back out. So.
That's right. Yeah, so Jack brings the device back to CTU. It gets stolen by Steve. Steve's running away from Jack. Jack's in pursuit. Steve, I guess, gets away. Although Jack seems like he's really close. So it's not really clear how Steve gets away, I guess.
Well, like, he sort of gets into... an area where there's kind of 3 different ways that he can go, and Jack just doesn't know which way he went, I think.
Oh, okay.
And you can't really see him, so he just kind of got away.
Oh, I see.
So, then, like, we're pretty much at the end,
well,
right?
Well, there's one thing left I want to mention, which is Audrey gives Jack a little call while he's over at CIA London, and Audrey is just, like, she's all in on Jack at this point. Like,
D-T-F.
You ask her, hey, do you know Mark Boudreau? She's like, who's that?
Her marriage has gone south so quick. Jack's back in the picture. And she wants it bad. You know, so she calls Jack up. There's this whole thing. Jack says, hey, that's great, you know, that you want me so bad. But I got to do my job. He has a call on the other line. Just kind of flips to that fingerprint call. And
but does he realize that saving her... her dad's life is, you know, what base is he going to get to by doing that? You know,
ooh,
like,
excellent question. I feel like saving your dad slash the POTUS's life, that's probably good for at least a triple to a home run, I think.
He saved the dad. He saved the POTUS. He saved thousands of random Londoners.
He's not forging presidential signatures, which will come back to haunt Boudreaux.
We did see a brief glimpse of that right at the end of the episode. Was Mark just staring at the signature?
I'm not sure how he got that back.
I guess he's got it. I guess like they just send the Russians a copy or
seems
something.
Like he could just tear it up if that he has it. But yeah, he was just like one of the split frames at the end was him just staring at the signature. Just fuck, I'm fucked right now. Out the president was going to be dead and this thing was going to be a problem. Bad news.
Oh, I can't wait for more Mark Boudreaux. I want Mark Boudreaux to have his own show.
My God. I want to start a campaign for a Mark Boudreaux spinoff.
Mark Boudreaux for president.
Oh, no.
Boudreaux Clinton 2016.
Is Boudreaux the president and Hillary Clinton is the vice president in this situation?
Of course.
Oh, my God. Wow.
I guess Clinton Boudreaux makes more sense.
If they don't put Mark Boudreaux in the next season 24, I'm going to freak out.
Well, is Mark Boudreaux going to survive the season?
He's not going to die, but I think he will... You think that Mark Boudreaux is going to die?
This season's going straight George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, maybe. Serious. Just killing bitches.
That's the reason why he brought on Catelyn Stark.
Yeah.
All this season has to do with is the last season of Game of Thrones. We're just seeing the exact same thing. Just in a one season worth of five seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I feel like, you know, he that signature thing will come out. And Audrey will know about it, and she will break up with him, divorce him. Maybe it takes 6 hours for a divorce. I don't know.
So it was interesting how last week, like, I thought, like, oh, the president's dead. No one can confirm the president didn't sign it now. I thought that's where it was going to go. But now the president's not dead, and he'd be like, I didn't sign that. What are you talking about? So
there is no chance.
You don't know me.
There is no chance that the president is letting Jack go to the Russians at this point. You know, Jack just saved the day. He's not going to the Russians. I can't imagine that.
Is Mark going to the Russians?
Oh, man. A little swap? Maybe.
A little swap.
Maybe.
I'm not giving you Jack, but here's Mark Boudreaux.
What the fuck do you do with Mark Boudreaux? He just hangs out and makes horrible decisions.
You just hang him in, like, Red Square whatever.
Here's one of my favorite things about Mark Boudreaux. You know, he makes, in the last episode, not this week, the previous episode, what seems to be a great and kind of courageous decision to support this plot by the president to give himself up, and he gets totally fucked by it. I was like, man, this guy's on the right track now. You know, he's going to be kind of smooth sailing. Not at all.
We were impressed that Mark Boudreaux stepped up last week, and he is nowhere better for it.
Oh, not at all. That'll teach him to try to do something good.
That teaches him to get on Team Bauer when Team Bauer just involves stealing his wife.
It's the goal of Team Bauer. Oh, man. So that's it, right? So, you know, Chloe's with WikiLeaks.
Well, do we want to make something of the fact that Chloe actually sort of kissed Julian Assange? So sort of... They've already been hinting at that a lot, so it didn't seem super different.
Yeah, I don't think that was really a surprise. There's kind of been some romantic tendencies there all season. I wasn't super surprised by that. You know, the one thing that you can think about is, was Chloe helping Jack to the end of, like, them getting control of that override thing? You know, and she was kind of in on that plan.
Well, should we start talking about the next time on?
Sure.
So the next time on really makes it seem like Chloe is not down with Julian Assange's plan.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Julian Assange is taking over some kind of nuclear submarine, and she does not seem down on board with this plan.
So it was revealed in this episode that this override thing can apparently override any military system for some reason. Like, they're all built in the same code base. It can override anything. So it is essentially the world's best super weapon at this point. You know, you can control any weapon system with it.
And the world's least secure system, probably of all time.
Oh, totally. There's, like, a circuit board that's, like, hacking everything. It's crazy.
Don't worry, they mentioned the 2048-bit encryption. So,
yeah.
So you know they're doing good work.
Yeah, there's some tech guys throwing some terms there. But, yeah, so, you know, yeah, he has control of it and is apparently using it to control a nuclear sub and launch missiles from it, and Chloe is not down with that.
So it really seems like next week is going to focus on Chloe a lot. And does she betray Julian Assange to Jack, or does she go along with Julian Assange's plan, even though she's not super on board with it? What way do you think she's going to go?
Well, I guess it depends on, what's her relationship with Jack before this episode?
They were essentially kind of teammates for every season. You know, like, Jack's kind of the field guy who goes out and field and kills people, and Chloe's kind of the tech person who kind of supports him from, you know, the CIA, CTU.
So she's either going to betray Lemmy Winks, Jack, or, you know, the season's going to end in a way that she is somewhat of a martyr in some way.
Oh.
That's my guess.
You think she might sacrifice herself for Jack?
Well, I mean, I can't see this. I mean, the amazing acting I saw tonight. I mean, I can't imagine that they'd want to go another season, because they culminate in this season. And so I feel like Chloe is going to end up just, you know, never even making, not even getting up to bat. She's going to be a bat boy forever with Jack Bauer.
She's not getting ahead of Audrey in the rotation.
Correct. Yeah. Why would you go with the much smarter person who can just figure out every difficult problem with every single, you know, world terrorist issue with the country, and just go with some random presidential daughter?
Maybe you don't like her eyeliner.
Maybe.
That's some serious eyeliner she's got this season.
Julian Assange is super into it, though.
I mean, Julian Assange makes her wear that eyeliner. He is the influence there.
You think she wasn't wearing it until she met him, and he's like, put on this eyeliner.
Yeah, you're going to need to wear this eyeliner. I feel like that, I mean, we've talked about this, I think, but that eyeliner has to be tattooed on, because she's been sweating and crying and stuff, and that stuff, that eyeliner's sticking.
I don't know. Maybe every commercial break, she's just, like, reapplying her eyeliner.
Touching it up.
This is what Julian Assange taught her. Before everything, you put your eyeliner back.
Because you never know. You never know. So, yeah, so that's it for this week, I think. So now we're going to move into the segments.
Are you going to do the stingers?
Oh, comparison? God. I don't want to even try to.
I don't think
to,
we can do them justice.
Yeah, I don't want to try to duplicate Chris's stingers, but it's time for Kill of the Week right now.
So Kill of the Week. So as I said earlier, at one point I was like, oh my gosh, there are so many candidates for Kill of the Week this week. Because like when Kate and Eric drove up, Eric just like shot that guy right like as the car was still in motion.
Just right out the window. Good. Just
there was that guy that like was trying to hunt Jack on the roof, and you thought he was gonna get the drop on Jack, and then Jack just like appears above him.
That one
takes him out.
That one for me is a close runner up.
That's a pretty cool, that was a really like that would have won a lot of weeks this season.
Jack's just kind of sneaking around the ground, and all of a sudden he appears on top of this, you know, air conditioning unit or something, just shoots that guy in the face. Yeah. It was great.
There was Rob Stark going out the window. That was a real solid kill as Jack's just like rappelling down and stuff. And I feel like there was a couple other ones, but then all of a sudden it was like, oh, this is over. Kill of the Week is obvious this week.
Yeah, obviously Jack Bauer tossing Cat Star from that window. The death of Margot.
The death of Margot, who was a great character. Like, I really enjoyed Margot / Cat Stark as a villain. I thought she was really great.
She did dismount from that floor perfectly, though.
Jack Bauer threw her so perfectly out the window that she landed right on her head, too.
The exact same way as her bastard. Or no, he wasn't a bastard son. He was a real son.
Yeah, he was a real son.
That's right.
King of the North. Yeah, I mean, that was great, and you know, I really appreciated like her being a good, compelling villain, because kind of too often in shows like this, it's just like some random, you know, Russian dude or something, and it's like not very interesting. Like I think that she was a really good, interesting kind of villain. You know, she's this kind of compelling sort of British woman with like, you know, married to this kind of terrorist type guy, and I think it was interesting.
I think. It's slightly worrisome for the last three episodes, because now, you know, we've got Julian Assange and Steve Navarro / Lou Diamond Phillips as the villains for the rest of the season. And, like, they might not be able to hold up. Like, they might not be able to keep us as entertained as Cat Stark did.
Steve Navarro is not a compelling villain. I'm not worried about that, though, because he's about to get a bullet in the brain as soon as he delivers that thing. You know, he's out of the equation. There's no way that he's living through this.
Quick poll. Does Steve Navarro get killed by Jack Bauer or Julian Assange?
Julian Assange.
Let me winks.
As soon as he delivers that device, bullet in the head. He's not necessary. He's a loose end. He's done.
He's definitely a loose end.
He didn't really think about that very much, I think.
And he didn't think about a lot of things.
Yep.
And only some high-up CIA operative would just walk into something like that.
Just one comment about Steve Navarro. He did not look as good with the messenger bag as Jack Bauer. He did not look as good running around with that, I think.
Who looks as good as Jack Bauer with a messenger bag, really?
Though? That's fair. It's a fair point.
Jack Bauer's been rocking the messenger bag for like a decade now, and he knows how to pull it off.
He was wearing messenger bags before anyone was, I feel like. So we have Margo for Killer Week. Mole Hunt, I don't even know if we really need to talk about this, because I feel like we're kind of wrapping up with the season, but any new mole theories?
I guess I don't have any. Like, there was one, like, for a brief second where you could wonder if Kate is actually in on it, and that she was actually helping out, like, the whole, like, Jack needs to get the override so you can give it to Steve, so Steve can give it to Julian, and Kate was totally helping that out. I don't think that's the way they're going to go, but, like, it's definitely out there.
There was, like, a specific shot in the episode tonight where I totally thought that she was a mole. Like when, you know, in, like, I didn't think that for the rest of the season at all, but it was kind of, you know, they really made a point about Jack grabbing that sort of briefcase with the override in it, and then there's this look that she gives him, like she's about to take it from him, but it just is like a total non-event. Like, it was just like weird editing, I think. But like, I totally thought for a second it was going to happen.
I would say Chloe, though, because like, what the hell is going on with this girl? Just randomly helping up Julian. Is she helping out Jack? What kind of mole is she? You know.
Kind of prior to this season, we were to kind of understand that she was working with this WikiLeaks sort of organization. So she kind of been there for a while, and like the season kind of opens with her being captured by CIA and Jack breaking her out of that, and kind of taking her back to this WikiLeaks thing. So she'd already kind of been working with these guys for a while and in a seemingly romantic relationship with that guy. So. I mean, she could be a mole. I think that the next time kind of maybe points to maybe not.
I guess Chloe, the way, depending how you look at it, she's either a mole against Jack or she's a mole for Jack. Because if she's really helping out WikiLeaks, she's kind of betraying Jack in a mole kind of way. But if she's going to actually end up helping out Jack, she's a mole against WikiLeaks. But I don't know if either of those really counts as a mole in the way we're really, really thinking of it. I guess
so. It's
the,
like a Cindy Crawford type of mole. Like, it helps, but it's also just there for enjoyment. Like, what are you getting at here?
That I can't put it any better than that. The other, Chris isn't here to bring it up, so I'll bring it up in his behalf. Chris is the leader of the Mark Boudreaux's a mole train, and Mark Boudreaux was looking at that signature, being like, "How am I gonna stop my wife from boning Jack Bauer?" And so he's definitely figuring out how he can still get Jack over to the Russians.
I mean, Mark Boudreaux is not a mole, but he's kind of a schemer. Like, you know, he's kind of doing sketchy stuff and scheming, but I don't think he's really working for someone and sort of feeding information like a mole kind of would. Like,
no.
He's definitely kind of doing some nefarious things.
But if Mark Boudreaux gets an opportunity where, hey, you can betray Jack Bauer in some way that doesn't cause huge harm to the president...
Oh, he's totally
and
digging
then
over.
Jack Bauer goes to the Russians, and you still get to have sex with your wife. Mark Boudreaux is all in on that plan.
He's totally dicking over Jack Bauer. I mean, he's trying to set that situation up for sure.
Yeah.
You know, he might try to plant some evidence or something kind of crazy on Jack Bauer. You know, maybe Jack Bauer was complicit in Steve being able to steal that override. You know, I don't know. Like stuff like that could happen.
Do you think there's any chance Mark confesses to the President Audrey about the signature?
I'm not sure that he's going to confess, but it's going to be found out.
It's going to be found out, but is there any chance he confesses? That he's like, hey guys, so this is the thing I kind of did. because I didn't want to lose my wife to Jack Bauer.
You know, I'm not sure if he'll explain it in that way. But, you know, if he was smart, he'd get out in front of it. But I don't think he's
right.
smart enough to do that. I'm going to say no.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts, Alex?
I mean, it's analogous to, like, getting caught going to the strip club by your wife. It's like, oh, I didn't realize I was there, babe. I was just trying to get some food. All these gigantic breasts are in my face.
That totally sounds like something Mark Boudreau would say.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, I think that kind of wraps up. Any more comments about the episode? Anything you're excited about? Anything?
I'm excited for Chloe. I think the next episode's a big Chloe episode. I think Chloe's really gonna have to like pick sides. Like she's through this song, she's gonna be like, yeah, this is my plan to screw over all these governments, and Chloe's gonna have to pick sides. And I think she's gonna pick Jack Bauer's side.
I mean, I think she's definitely picking Jack Bauer's side. You know, she's kind of been on the sidelines for, well, not, you know,
she's been on the sidelines for a few episodes.
She's been on the sidelines for a lot of the season, really. You know, she's been like an active participant, sort of helping, but she hasn't really been a main focus of the season.
I felt she was super involved the first like 3 or 4 episodes.
Yep.
And she's been real on the sidelines for a while.
Yep.
And I feel now she's going to be brought back in a big way. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I would say this was quite the B episode. The previous episode we had the explosions. A lot of, you know, we kind of had the water explosion today and like the kind of perfectly placed bodies next to each other on the ground for the kill of the week. I think next week is going to be quite, you know, explosive with, you know, a lot of CGI, a lot of special effects. I'm looking
a lot of horrible CGI. Yeah.
Maybe next week's the good CGI.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll go to college-level CGI instead of this high school what we've seen.
And they saved up their budget to hire, like, ILM for one episode to get it done.
No, what's the one in New Zealand that does the Lord of the Rings movies?
I don't know. I don't know.
That sucked.
Maybe that can be our fact of the week next
fact
week.
Fact of the week. What's the name of that. The CGI company that does Lord of the Rings movies?
Absolutely. Cool. Well, I think that about does it. Do you guys have anything that you want to plug? Time for plugs.
You can tweet at me at @RobKitts. If you have Drink of the Week suggestions for next week, we definitely want to hear them. If you have Chloe theories for next week or Mark Boudreau, I want to hear all your theories. I'm so in on Mark Boudreau now. I want his own TV show at this point.
We should do a kind of best Mark Boudreau meme contest for this next week.
That'd be great.
Okay, so
send us your Mark Boudreau memes.
We'll do post your Mark Boudreau memes, and we'll do something fun in the next episode for that.
I just want to say, you know, glad I'm in town. Happy for my friend Greg getting married this Thursday. Happy to spend time with Emmy and Rob. And the drink of the week is definitely effective. That's all I have to say.
Passing out?
I'm passing out.
Do we know what Chris's Twitter account is this week? Is it @ZeroLorenz30 or is it something else?
I don't know. I think he might have changed it. What was it? What was it last week?
It was @TheChrisLorenz.
I feel like that's a pretty good one. I don't know if he changed it.
You don't think he changed it? He's changed it for a bunch of weeks. So
he has.
I don't know if he changed it.
Yeah, not sure. I guess maybe we'll find out about that.
You should definitely follow Chris, whatever his Twitter account is.
Yes. I am @HarrisonHoffman on Twitter. And everyone have a great week. And we will see you next week for another exciting episode of the David Palmer Presidential Library.
Bye.
Bye.
Toodaloo.